So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. At that time, Eva, just, Tasmin, within the pillar, Ninadaha, a sound, Ativishanaha, very fearful. Bhuva,
there was.
Yena, by which? Annakataham,
the covering of the universe.
Asputat, appeared to crack. Yam,
which?
Vai, indeed. Swadishya
upagatam,
reaching their respective abodes. The demigods headed by Lord Brahma. Shutva,
hearing.
Swadhamma
atayam.
The destruction of their abodes. Anga,
my dear Yudhisthira.
Menire,
thought.
Translation. Then from within the pillar came a fearful sound, which appeared to crack the covering of the universe. Oh, my dear Yudhisthira. This sound reached even the abodes of the demigods like Lord Brahma, and when the demigods heard it, they thought, oh, now our planets are being destroyed. So you can repeat. And then from within the pillar
came a fearful sound,
which appeared to crack
the covering of the universe.
Oh, my dear Yudhisthira,
this sound reached even the abodes
of the demigods like Lord Brahma.
And when the demigods heard it,
they thought,
now our planets are being destroyed.
So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As we sometimes become very much afraid at the sound of a thunderbolt, perhaps thinking that our houses will be destroyed, the great demigods like Lord Brahma feared the thundering sound that came from the pillar in front of Hiranyakashipu. So it's a very short purport, mostly explanatory. So we'll read the next text with its longer purport. Text 16. Savikraman putra vahep surajasa nishamya niradam apurvam adbutam ananda svayam nadarshatatparam vitatra suryena surari yutapaha. While showing his extraordinary prowess, Hiranyakashipu, who desired to kill his own son, heard that wonderful, tumultuous sound, which had never before been heard. Upon hearing the sound, the other leaders of the demons were afraid. None of them could find the origin of that sound in the assembly. So purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter, text 8, Krishna explains himself by saying, Rasoham apsukantiya prabhajmi sashishuryaha pranavasarva vedeshu shabdake purasham nrishu. O son of Kunti, Arjuna, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable om and the Vedic mantras. I am the sound and ether and the ability of man. Here the Lord exhibited his presence everywhere by the tumultuous sound in the sky, Shabda Ke. The tumultuous thundering sound was proof of the Lord's presence. The demons like Hiranyakashipu could now realize the supreme ruling power of the Lord, and thus Hiranyakashipu became afraid. However powerful a man may be, he always fears the sound of a thunderbolt. Similarly, Hiranyakashipu and all the demons who were his associates were extremely afraid because of the presence of the Supreme Lord in the form of sound, although they could not trace out the source of the sound. Om Ganat Madanda Shag and Anjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So here is mentioned in the second verse that Hiranyakashipu was interested in showing off his extraordinary prowess. In other words, he had great power. And of course, with great power, one becomes very proud. One becomes proud of different things because of strength, because of beauty, because of intelligence. There's many of these things. Some of them are described by Queen Kunti in her prayers. She says, Janmaishwarya Shuntasu Shibir Edamana Adapuman. That we become proud of our good birth. We become proud because we're learned. And, oh, another thing I mentioned was money. One becomes proud of wealth. So, of course, these are the opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is all-attractive. The Lord is all-powerful. The Lord owns everything. That's wealth, of course. The Lord is very renounced. One becomes very proud of his renunciation. Sometimes you see sannyasis become very proud of these different things. And I was just listening to a class of Srila Prabhupada, where Prabhupada was talking to a devotee who was taking the position of the scientists who were very proud of their ability to create life. Of course, they can't create life. And Prabhupada was actually dissuading or arguing with this devotee who was taking the part of the scientists. The scientists say, you know, they can create life, and then because of their pride in their intelligence, they're saying that even though they haven't created life, they will create life. And then Prabhupada said, of course, that's like a post-dated check. That's one of the typical things that Prabhupada would say. And Prabhupada also said, even if they could create life, which they can't create life, because Prabhupada has taken a rhetorical situation there, then still, what is the glory of that? Because Krishna has created all these lives, and also people are able to create lives. You know, men and women get together, animals get together, and they have different children, everything. So, in one sense, they're actually more efficient and more intelligent than the scientists because they're already doing those things. And then Prabhupada gave his typical example of how people will not pay to see a dog bark. You know, obviously, you don't like it when a dog barks. But if a person barks like a dog, then people will pay to see that. What that means, actually, is that people will not glorify God for arranging all these things, creating life, but if some scientist happens to do some tiny little thing, you know, create one cell creature, which he hasn't done, which they won't be able to do, then everybody starts glorifying these particular individuals. So the point is that, of course, life comes from life. That's one of the main things that Prabhupada would often preach about. But the main point is that one should not become proud of his particular abilities in this world. And of course, when one becomes proud, then at that particular point, one thinks that they don't need God. And when they think they don't need God, then they become atheists. I mean, there's so many people who write nowadays about trying to dissuade people from believing in God. And basically, they say that they understand how the material world was created. It was created by chance, or they could do the same thing as whatever. So the point is that we have to understand our dependence on the Supreme Personality of Godhead at every minute. And, of course, Hiranyakashipu's prowess that is being mentioned here comes from Krishna. Krishna says in the Gita, another verse, of course, is that I am the strength of the strong. So these are different opulences that Krishna presents, of course, in the Gita, in the 11th chapter and the 7th chapter, which Prabhupada mentions here. Krishna mentions different things that are manifestations of him, like he says, like Prabhupada is quoted here, I'm the ability in man, or I'm the strength of the strong, or amongst fishes I'm the aquatic, the shark, amongst the aquatics I'm the shark. So these are all manifestations of the Lord's potencies. So whenever we see someone or ourselves exhibit these opulences, we should just appreciate Krishna. It's all coming from Krishna, rather than thinking that these belong to us. So anyway, these are some of the points I can get from this verse. I think we can continue reading the Bhagavatam at this particular point, because these are pretty much explanatory. Text 17, we're going to go into text 17. Sacham vidatam nija britja bhashitam vyaptim nabhute shvakileshu chatmanaha adrishyatatya bhuta rupam udvahan stambe savayam namrigam namanusham. To prove that the statement of his personal of his servant Prahlad Maharaj was substantial, in other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of the assembly hall, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. So Prabhupada explains in his purport, when Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad Maharaj, where is your Lord? Is he present in this pillar? Prahlad Maharaj fearlessly replied, yes, my Lord is present everywhere. Therefore, to convince Hiranyakashipu that the statement of Prahlad Maharaj was unmistakably true, the Lord appeared from the pillar. The Lord appeared as half lion and half man, so that Hiranyakashipu could not understand whether the great giant was a lion or a human being. To substantiate Prahlad's statement, the Lord proved that his devotee, as declared in Bhagavad Gita, is never vanquished. Kuntaya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati. Prahlad Maharaj's demoniac father had repeatedly threatened to kill Prahlad. But Prahlad was confident that he could not be killed, since he was protected by the Supreme Lord. By appearing from the pillar, the Lord encouraged his devotees, saying in effect, don't worry, I am present here. By manifesting his form as Nrisimhadeva, the Lord also preserved the truth of Lord Brahma's promise that Hiranyakashipu was not to be killed by any animal or any man. The Lord appeared in a form that could not be said to be fully a man or a lion. So 2 points here in the purport. One point is, of course, as Prabhupada said, that Krishna is present everywhere. Actually, referring back to the first verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, talking about how the Lord is indirectly and directly manifest everywhere, we need to comment on that. Actually, the first verse of the Bhagavatam is very, very interesting. It contains the philosophy, basically, of the whole Bhagavatam. The first verse of the Bhagavatam is actually making reference also to the Vedanta Sutra, as is the whole Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is actually a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So how is the Lord directly present and indirectly present simultaneously everywhere? Of course, that's in line with our Achincha Beta Beta Tattva philosophy. The Lord is directly present everywhere as his super soul, who's present in every atom and in everyone's heart. And he's indirectly present in terms of his energies. For example, we are also Krishna's energy. The external energy, the Maya, is also Krishna's energy. So Krishna is indirectly and directly present, yet he is cognizant of everything. And his direct presence is not as his original form of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, as stated, Goloka Nibhivashati Akilatma Bhuta, that Krishna never leaves Goloka Vrindavan. But Krishna's direct presence is manifest by an expansion of his plenary expansion, of plenary expansion, of plenary expansion, which is the Shurodakshai Vishnu. So that's how Krishna is directly present and indirectly present through his energy. So that's the first point made here. Second point is how Krishna is protecting his devotees. As Prabhupada quotes here from the Bhagavad Gita, Kuntaya Pratijanitihi, Name Bhakta Pranachati, my devotee will never perish. So Krishna is also protecting us in every circumstance too. Of course, Krishna's protection doesn't mean that we're not going to get sick, we're not going to get old, and certainly we're not going to die. Krishna's protection is that Krishna will always keep us in a situation that's best for our spiritual lives. That's how Krishna protects his devotees. Because obviously, Prahlad Maharaj eventually did leave this world, and we see all great devotees, they do leave this world, they do get old, and they do get sick. So Krishna's protection manifests in that particular way. So, actually, any questions or comments about these things? I don't have anything else to say about these verses. Questions, comments, Apurva? For his devotee.
So, how can we be receptive to that and be open to the possibilities that...
Better get the microphone.
...available to help increase our advancement in spiritual life? See, how to tell?
Well, to understand that whatever happens that's not our particular mistake, or doing, because we can't blame Krishna for what we do. Whatever happens is arranged by Krishna. And even unfortunate things, of course, Prabhupada was very fond of commenting repeating this verse, Yashaham anagrinami rishe tadanam shanai. For those who I especially favor, I take away everything. So, to see that when Krishna puts us in difficult circumstances, that is actually Krishna's arrangement. In other words, to see everything as Krishna. Krishna says in the Gita, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me is never lost to me, nor am I ever lost to him. So whatever circumstance we happen to be in, it's Krishna. And also, tatena kamtham, sushamikshamana bunjanabhatma kritam vipakam, Ridbhag Vapurvir Vidadam Namaste, Jivaita Yo Mukti Pade Siddhayabhak, that we tolerate all these difficulties that come to us and understand two things. It's Krishna, and also Krishna's minimizing, he's giving us a token reaction for our previous activities. And toleration means Ridbhag Vapurvir Vidadam Namaste, that we go on serving Krishna with our body, mind, and words in spite of all these things that are occurring. So in other words, to see Krishna everywhere. Krishna has done this to me. Therefore, what lesson do I have to learn? Therefore, what do I have to do about it? Etc. You understand? Just to see that whatever happens is Krishna. And when you see that, and then have faith, also that Krishna loves you, and that whatever Krishna is doing is for your own spiritual benefit, then you accept it. And you learn the lesson that you're supposed to learn from that particular circumstance. It requires faith. That, you know, I'm put into this difficult circumstance, or I'm put into this pleasant circumstance. In one sense, it's harder to see Krishna behind things that are pleasant than seeing Krishna behind things that are unpleasant. I mean, obviously, you know, one's experiencing pain, one thinks, oh, you know, Krishna, you know, why are you doing this to me? Or even when Jesus Christ was on the cross, he said, oh, my Lord, why hast thou forsaken me? So he was thinking of Krishna. So it's easier to say, as they say, there's no atheists in the trenches or the foxholes. But there's a lot of atheists in Las Vegas. You know, in places where everything, in Hawaii, for example, where everything is going nicely. So just like, you know, just like now the weather's a little cold, so it forces us to take shelter of Krishna. We chant. We just think, oh my God, you know, we're doing this for Krishna. But when the weather's pleasant, then we just want to enjoy life. So anyway, so in every circumstance, we understand Krishna's arranged this for my spiritual edification, for my spiritual purification. Does that make sense? Any other questions? Or comments? Yeah.
Since you asked and you mentioned why, my question here is, how do we determine how to proceed if some opportunity comes and about choosing? We got a phone call yesterday from Shri Kirti.
Uh-huh. He wants you to go to Hawaii.
Yeah, because and here we have a whole network of things that we're going to be doing, going to India for 2 months, and then we have to come back for Sadhusanga, which we already paid for, and then there's the New Vrindavan Festival of Inspiration. But it seems like here's someone who's like a representative of Prabhupada, and he's saying, please come. Is that, how do we choose?
Because, well, it's very easy to, I mean, I would, for me it's easy. I mean, of course, one point is you take shelter or you take advice from devotees who are more advanced. If it was me, I would choose serving the mission as more important than any, you know, festivals and things like that, which are actually, you know, the festivals are nice, but actually Krishna says in the Gita, one who preaches this Krishna consciousness is most dear to me, and never will there be one more dear to me than one who preaches Krishna consciousness, preaches the Bhagavad Gita, explains the Bhagavad Gita. So I take that in a larger sense. Larger sense means serving the mission. Like Prabhupada talked about how ISKCON was like the Indian railway system. Not exactly as inefficient. Maybe it's more inefficient than the Indian railway system. But in any case, the trains are never on time. Actually, one devotee told me yesterday that when he came to America and saw the trains are on time, he just couldn't understand it. He came from India, you know. And he just saw, he was in, I think it was in Boston, and he saw the trains were exactly in time. He said, what's happening here? This is bewildering. So anyway, so sometimes ISKCON management is like that. So, but I take it, like Prabhupada said, the Indian railway system, just keep the wheels turning. In other words, those who go out and preach frontline, that's understandable, they're preaching Bhagavad Gita. But those who assist are just as valuable, who assist in the preaching, you know, either through the deity worship or the cooking prasadam or some serving the mission is the point. Sometimes people think that they'll become more advanced by going to Radhakund, sitting down and chanting and developing their, you know, whatever, internal life. But Prabhupada defeated that particular philosophy in his Vrindavan Bhajan, which I think I gave you a copy of that. And so the point is, we go out and we serve the mission. And whatever is best, my standard, this is my standard, my humble advice, my standard is whatever is best for serving the mission, rather than thinking about, I mean, obviously you've got to take care of one's own spiritual life by chanting your rounds, by reading Prabhupada's books regularly, by waking up early, by doing your sadhana. I'm not saying that this is not the case. But apart from that, one should devote the maximum time possible to serving the mission. So if you have an opportunity to serve the mission versus thinking about one's own personal, you know, ecstasy, to me it's, this is my own personal opinion, I'm not saying what you should do, to me it's a no-brainer. You know, serving the mission. Just like I'm serving the mission here, I mean, if you ask me as far as my own personal ecstasy, I'd rather be in Govardhan. You know, chanting Hare Krishna in ecstasy, as they say in this funny cartoon they used to have, Goodbye Cruel World. Of course, in that cartoon, someone was flushing themselves down the toilet. But, for me, on a personal basis, I'd rather be Govardhan. The weather doesn't bother me. I mean, cold weather is, or hot weather, that we have to tolerate. But I'd rather be there chanting. However, whenever I think about that, I hear Prabhupada telling me, you know, don't you understand, you're not supposed to enjoy Krishna, you're supposed to serve Krishna. So really, that's the point. Whatever is best for serving the mission. However, and there's another caveat too, one has to also take care of oneself. And we're not only speaking spiritually to taking care of oneself. One has to see, let's say, you serve the mission and there's no arrangement for your future when you when you get older or something like that. You know, there has to be some, I mean, if you expect, you go to Hawaii and then when you become disabled, they just kick you out. That may happen too. So you have to really make arrangement for your own, you know, material welfare as well as spiritual welfare. I mean, so it's a balance of different factors. So let's say if you go to Hawaii and serve, and then when you're no longer able to serve, they say, you know, hasta la vista, Apurva, then, you know, that's another factor to consider. So there's many different factors, but ultimately, with myself, it's just a question of serving the mission. So we take so much austerity in serving the mission. You know, we're here serving the mission. And I, wherever I went, I was serving the mission. I just came back from a trip. I was visiting my zone in Slovenia. It was very cold. There were ice storms there, too. I couldn't even do my walks every day because there were ice storms, because I was serving the mission. I mean, sure, I could have gone anywhere I want. And, you know, the people would give me facility anywhere. I could go to Hawaii, too. But if it's serving the mission, then I'm very enthusiastic. Does that answer your question?
Very nice.
Yeah. So whatever is best, I mean, whatever is best for pleasing Prabhupada. That's what I mean. I mean, ultimately, we're meant to please His Divine Grace Śrīla Prabhupada. So we should picture ourselves in front of Prabhupada and asking Prabhupada, you know, what should we do in this particular circumstance? And, you know, I'm not going to answer that for you, what Prabhupada would say to you. But, yeah, I mean, you could, that's your relationship with Prabhupada. I mean, for example, Prabhupada would send devotees out in all sorts of missions. Like, I remember he sent Tripakram Maharaj, I think it was to Korea or something like that. And Tripakram Maharaj, or Taiwan or somewhere. And Tripakram Maharaj said that, you know, there's nobody with me. And Prabhupada basically said, you have my books, you know, and you have, you know, so go. You know, Prabhupada would actually, and he's sending Tamal Krishna Maharaj to China on the mission. So an easy life in Krishna consciousness, and Krishna conscious advancement don't go well together. If one wants to advance, one has to stick one's neck out and serve the mission. I mean, I just, so many things. I mean, like I said, I was in Europe, and then I went to, we had a GBC meeting, which is not the most pleasant experience in the three worlds, you know, sitting so many hours. I mean, it wasn't, let's say, unpleasant, just boring. To me, that's the most unpleasant thing. You have to ask me, what's the biggest austerity that I do for Krishna? I have to sit through meetings that are boring. I'd rather sit through meetings that are tense, people yelling. You know, you have to think a lot, come up with solutions. I'd rather have anxiety than be bored. So, and then I went to New Taliban, and it was practically day and night. Devotees were approaching me, so many things happening. Whether to kick this devotee out because this devotee was dysfunctional. I mean, I had to deal with so many things over the last few weeks when I've been gone. But I'm happy because I was serving the mission. I'm not thinking, you know, when can I get to the nectar? That is, and then Prabhupada will actually give me the nectar. See, there's two methods. This was actually a question that was raised in New Taliban when I was giving class. There's two methods for becoming Krishna conscious. One is, you know, you get your siddha pranali. You know, your guru tells you what your internal relationship was with Krishna, and you just sit there and you develop it. And the other methodology, or the other path, is serving the mission and getting special mercy. And the second path that we just mentioned gives us a quicker path going to back to Godhead, and it pleases Prabhupada. You know, I mean, personally, I don't really go to festivals because I have so much to do for Krishna. You know, people ask, why don't you go to this sangha or that sangha? But I have so much to do, I don't have time. Don't really have time for that. I mean, it's just serving the mission all the time. I mean, if I go and there's some preaching, it's all right, but I'm not going to just go somewhere for nectar. Because if I'm going for nectar, I have Prabhupada's books. I mean, Prabhupada's with me. So that's my particular take on things. So, any other questions? We have about 10 seconds left for class, or 15 seconds, or half a minute.
30 seconds.
If not, I want to thank everybody. All glories to His divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.